Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. Today's Baseball America Podcast is sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America Podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20 today. Now it's time to talk baseball.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Here with me today is Jim Schoenert and Mike Lanana, and we're going to talk about the latest edition of the Baseball America Top 25, powered by Louisville Slugger, and all of the action from an exciting weekend in college baseball. Guys, this weekend there was the big series between Texas A&M and Florida. It was number one versus number two down in Gainesville. And Florida comes out on top. They sweep A&M, who went into the weekend as the number one team. Florida had been the number one all season, dating back to preseason even. But they had lost to Kentucky a week before, and Texas A&M moved up to number one. But after this weekend, I mean, Florida really made a statement. I mean, what do you guys think about the Gators now that we've seen them play a team like Texas A&M and handle them as well as they did?
I think it just showed how complete Florida is. I mean, that was a pretty – just. I mean, they manhandled A&M's pitching. I mean, A&M's had a very good staff, and they just beat up on all three of their starters. And really, those first two games were – I mean, I know A&M kind of made them a little bit interesting, but they were really in control from the start. And, I mean, we'll have to see what happens with this A.J. Puck little – back thing he's got flaring up, but other than that, I mean, it's hard to be pretty much everything else is all good for the Gators.
Yeah, there was AJ Puck on Sunday, left after just 11 pitches, and when I talked to Kevin O'Sullivan after the game, he said that it was more of like a back spasm or just tightness in Puck's back, and they're just being pretty cautious with him, getting him out of there, and they think he'll probably be good to go next weekend, but we'll know more as the week goes on. But obviously, that's a big, potentially big development for the draft and for the Gators if something is actually wrong with Puck. But it does sound like he's okay for the most part. Mike, the Gators, they did really offensively this weekend. 24 runs, and that's a good A&M pitching staff there, but. Peter Alonso went off for the Gators, and it was all the way through the lineup. Eight different guys had multi-hit games throughout the weekend, and I mean, it just shows the depth that the Gators have offensively.
Right. Last week we dropped them to number two, just because we kind of had to with our pull mechanics and with them losing a series to Kentucky. But I think we were all kind of in agreement that we still thought they're the most talented team in the country. And I think they showed that this weekend against Texas A&M. And I thought, in your off-the-bat piece this morning, you have a quote from Alonzo talking about just how they felt that they were the number one team regardless. And, I like that. I like that swagger that they have. I like that confidence. And they should have it because you look at the talent on their roster. You look at how deep the lineup is. It's good to see them, doing that against a difficult Texas A&M pitching staff. And, even if, obviously it sounds like Puck's injury isn't major, but even if he did go down for a little bit of time, they have the depth on the pitching staff to survive it, So it's a scary club, and, this was a big statement. And, hey, this weekend coming up, we have another team they're facing in Mississippi State that's also red hot. So that's going to be an exciting series to watch, too.
No doubt. When I talked to Alonzo last night, yeah, he said that, the Gators felt like they were the number one team in the country, and they wanted to prove it to everyone that, that they were the number one team regardless of what had happened the week before, and that was what they did. Sully was a little less, he was a little more reserved about what that weekend meant, that, it's still early in the season, and a coach is supposed to take the broad view, and in the SEC, we're only 3 weekends into this, and like Mike said, they've got Mississippi State coming in next weekend, and so they really don't have any time to enjoy this one. They've got to just get ready to move on. They play Tuesday against Jacksonville, and then Mississippi State comes in on the weekend. So Florida, like any other team in the SEC, has no breaks here. They, you roll in from playing number one to playing number five now, and that's just the way the SEC is this season. But what about for A&M now? That was the first series loss. That was really their biggest, obviously it was their biggest test of the season. They started off SEC play with series wins against Auburn and LSU, but Florida's a completely different animal, and so you don't want to overreact to what happened this weekend, because a lot of what we saw from A&M was a result of just how good Florida is, I think. But you know, what A&M now has to regroup. You know, their pitching, their starting pitching was not particularly good. I've already seen some rumblings that Childress might be shaking up the rotation there. You know, did we learn anything about A&M? Are there any concerns that had already, you know, maybe, you know, kind of poked up a little bit that were exposed more this weekend by Florida?
I mean, you like that they showed a little fight, and especially in the Sunday game. I mean, they kind of let their lead slip away there. But, I mean, they do have to get the starting pitching in order. I mean, this is twice in 3 weeks. They've been hit pretty hard. Florida's one thing. They also got knocked around by Auburn a couple weeks ago. So that's a little worrisome, I guess, if you want to go that far. I mean, they get Georgia at home this weekend. I mean, that's not an easy series, but relative to what they've been doing, it's a series you got to win, realistically. I mean, Georgia did obviously just jump up and beat Alabama. But, because, I mean, A&M goes to Starkville in 2 weeks, and then they have to go to Arkansas, and they go to... I mean, all their road series are tough. They don't have any breaks there. So they got to get that in order. I think that's kind of the main thing to watch for them, for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. The starting pitching is a little bit of a concern. I was more concerned by that Auburn series than I was the Florida series, just because we know what Florida can do offensively. So, you know, we'll see if they do shake things up there. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, there's talent there in that rotation, but, you know, it's not the strongest group in the SEC necessarily from a pure stuff standpoint.
Yeah, it is interesting now in 3 weekends in the SEC, they've given up 27 runs to Auburn and 24 to Florida. And both those series were on the road. They did better at home against LSU. But it is a thing that they're going to have to figure out. Georgia put up a bunch of runs on Alabama this weekend, and Alabama really knows how to pitch. I mean, in the SEC, there are a lot of powerful offenses, and one of the strengths of A&M's team is the pitching staff, but you know, they're going to have to get more out of their starters. All three of them were knocked out pretty early on this weekend, and A&M was forced to play from behind a lot. They never led on Friday night. On Saturday, they only led very briefly. They scored 2 runs in the top of the first, and then they gave up 3 in the bottom half of that inning, and they didn't lead again the rest of the day. And they did have some leads on Sunday that they weren't able to hold, but those first 2 days, it was really just playing from behind, and that's not a position you want to be when you're playing Florida. The other big thing coming out of this weekend, I guess, with Florida was, you know, they set a program record. They've now won 27 in a row at home. That's 20 this season and 7 from last season. And Florida is just a really tough place to play right now. And Mississippi State is going to be walking into that. And so that it's not easy to go to Gainesville. And, you know, that's a big part of Florida's success this year. They have won on the road. They beat Miami on the road. But when you have to go to Gainesville, like teams are going to have to do in the postseason, you have to deal with that environment. And I mean, that kind of advantage is huge when you look down the road a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Florida's, I feel like they've been pretty, I mean, they've been dominant everywhere, but at home, I mean, still undefeated this far into the season and still be undefeated. I mean, that's considering who they've played. I mean, just A&M, you know, they had Florida State come in there. They've had some other, you know, good teams, obviously in the SEC. And that's, I mean, they're gonna be tough to knock out at home. Anybody can have a bad weekend, but it's gonna be a tall order for anyone going in there.
Well, the SEC is loaded, and there's more to talk about. But first, we want to get you a word from our sponsors here with SeatGeek.
Have you ever been frustrated trying to buy tickets online? Most sites make it complicated, and then try to sneak in huge fees at checkout. That's why you need SeatGeek. They've made it easier than ever to buy and sell sports and concert tickets. And I know a lot of you baseball fans out there are going to be looking for tickets, you know, as we head into the season here. Opening day over the weekend continues because MLB has strange opening days where they continue over multiple days. But you can go on to SeatGeek and, you know, they'll pull all the tickets available for any of those games. You know, Yankee Stadium snowed out today, but, you know, try them again tomorrow when they play, or any of the other sites around the country. The SeatGeek will save you time, and you'll never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming games, and SeatGeek will let you know when and if ticket prices fall. And for our listeners here on the Baseball America podcast, you can get a $20 off rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. To get the $20 rebate on tickets, you have to download the free SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab, you click add a promo code, enter the promo code BA20, that's BA20, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the free SeatGeek app, enter the promo code BA20, buy your tickets, whether we're talking about MLB opening day or anything else, NBA, NHL, it's all there. So you download the app, you enter the promo code, and you get $20 off your first ticket price. So SeatGeek, looking out for you there with all of your online ticket purchases.
All right, so like I said, there's plenty more to talk here in the SEC, and we've got South Carolina losing a series at Vanderbilt this last weekend. We have Mississippi State, who we mentioned has to go to Florida now. They beat their rivals Mississippi in Starkville. I mean, what stood out in the SEC? I mean, we also have Missouri and Georgia upsetting Arkansas and Alabama. I mean, what stood out for you guys elsewhere in the SEC?
For me, it's Mississippi State. I mean, they want to get back-to-back complete games to win the first two games of that series. They kind of let it slip away on the Sunday or the finale. I mean, their starter got knocked out early and they weren't able to come back, but still to just keep that momentum up that they've got building. And they kind of had a little slow start when they lost those two games to FAU an opening weekend, but they've been pretty much a steamrolling since then. And I mean talk about tough places to play. Starkville, that's as good of an environment as there is. I saw they had huge crowds all three games there, and that's another team that, assuming that if they can hold this up and get to be a host, and I mean, right now I've got them had them as a national seed, assuming as a third one out of the SEC. I mean, that's another place that is going to be just really tough to go win in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they are. I mean, when you think about tough environments, Starkville is definitely one that comes to mind. And these stats don't include Sunday's game, but through Saturday, in the last 16 home games for Mississippi State starting pitchers, they were 11-0 with an 0.54 ERA. And that speaks both to the quality of their starting pitchers there and how tough Starkville can be. So, I mean, it's big for Florida that they don't have to go to Starkville, that they get to stay in Gainesville this weekend. But it's going to be tough, and that's part of the reason why I moved Mississippi State into my 8 for Omaha this week. I mean, they're playing incredibly well, and they're just going to be an incredibly tough out in the postseason, even if they did have to go on the road. I mean, when you throw Dakota Hudson on in the first game of a series, whether it's super regionals or regionals, the Bulldogs are giving themselves a great chance every weekend, really, no matter who they're facing. Mike, what about you? What'd you like in the SEC?
Well, I mean, Mississippi State really stood out to me too. Just the fact that they've been such a roll lately, and winning those first two games, and not only that, but the pitching performances of Austin Sexton and Dakota Hunsett. I mean, back to back complete games. I mean, that's not something you see a lot. You take that out of your Friday and Saturday starters, but well, obviously we've touched on them quite a bit. For me, I look at that South Carolina Vanderbilt series. Even though Vanderbilt won it, you look at the SEC standings right now, and South Carolina and Florida are tied at 7-2. And I don't think that's something. I think we all expected Florida to be there, but before the season, I don't know if we expected South Carolina to be there per se. So that's been impressive to me just to see the season that they continue to have, even though they did drop that series to Vanderbilt. Braden Webb this weekend on Saturday in the one game that they did win, 8 innings, 11 strikeouts, 2 hits. He's starting to open some eyes, the rare draft-eligible freshman. And, but obviously you got to tip your cap to Vanderbilt winning that home series against a tough South Carolina team. And, they're starting to figure things out on the pitching side of things. That rotation is probably going to be in flux throughout the year as they get arms healthier. But, that, you know, just South Carolina, just seeing the standings and just seeing them at 7-2 tied with Florida is something that jumped out to me.
I think that was huge for Vanderbilt to win that series. They lost on opening weekend to Mississippi State at home, and then they went and they beat Missouri last week. But, you know, South Carolina came into Nashville 6-0 in the SEC. They swept Arkansas. They went to Oxford, and they swept Mississippi. So they were really rolling going in. They had lost to College of Charleston in midweek to snap their winning streak, but you know, that was a team that had a lot going for it going into Nashville, and Vanderbilt really showed, you know, what it's capable of, and we knew what it had been capable of all year, but to that point they didn't really have a standout series win. Missouri was a really nice win. They've had some good wins in non-conference. They went out to Stanford and won a series on the West Coast, but to beat South Carolina was big for them, and you know, it was big for the standings too. Like you mentioned, South Carolina is now tied with Florida there at the top, and Vanderbilt's, you know, fighting with those two teams in the division there. So for the Commodores to get that win and to get moving in the right direction or continue moving in the right direction was significant. And I thought on Friday night, Georgia got a huge start from Robert Tyler. He almost throws a no-hitter. He takes it. He's one out away when Alabama sends pinch hitter George Salem to the plate, and he takes Robert Tyler deep. Georgia still won the game quite easily. It was 7-1. And then they come back on Sunday and finish off a big series win for the Bulldogs. They lost their first two, and they're coming up now on this incredibly tough month. I don't know who in the SEC scheduling office is mad at Georgia, but I mean, what the Bulldogs have the next month is really, I mean, it might be the hardest month in the country. On the weekends, they play four straight top 10 teams, three of them on the road. They start this week at A&M, then they go back to Athens and get South Carolina, then they go to Gainesville, and then they go to Nashville. So if Georgia can somehow survive this next month, it would be pretty impressive. So, you know, to get a series win going into that, I think was pretty significant for them.
Not to mention they have midweeks against Georgia Tech and Clemson, which are going to be easy either.
No, I mean, those are tough, and those are tough ACC opponents, and they're rivals. I mean, it's really, I don't know how seeing how Georgia responds to this is going to be one of the most fascinating storylines throughout April for me. Elsewhere around the country, well, I guess, you know, Florida moves up to number one now. Texas A&M slides to three. In between, we've got Miami. And Miami, you guys, they're a freight train right now. They've won three straight series against top 25 opponents. This week it was North Carolina that they swept. Last week it was Clemson. The week before, they beat Louisville 2 out of 3. And it has all been in Miami, but I mean, those teams are good, and Miami's looked really impressive doing it.
Exactly. I mean, we know how good, you know, Carolina's pitching staff has been, especially with, you know, Gallen and Bukauskas at the top, and they pretty well handled both of those guys. And really, Thomas Woodry had a good start on Friday, so that's, you know, a big thing for Miami to get him going. And I mean, yeah, I mean, kind of like you pointed out. I mean, can you take for, you know, granted all three of these wins have been at home, these series, but I mean, that's another team that. As you know, Miami's very good at home. They play at home in the postseason a lot, and they're definitely on track to get there again. And they're pretty much, and they've already beat Louisville, so they're pretty well in the catbird seat to get the you know, be the ACC regular season title, you know, be the top seed in the tournament, and they're on fire.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I don't think there's been a team as impressive the last three weekends as this Miami team. Just what they've done: Louisville, Clemson, North Carolina, back to back sweeps. You know, it was really good, as Jim said, to see Thomas Woodry pitch well on Friday, because he struggled early on this year for them. If they can get him going, that's huge for them, you know, winning on those Friday nights. And then, you know, Michael Mediavilla has been a big addition to that weekend rotation. He's stabilized things for them on Saturday. He's been a guy who's pitched mostly out of the bullpen for them in his career. So I think he's done a great job of stabilizing things. I mean, they're throwing three lefties out there, which is an uncommon thing in college baseball, and you know, obviously they continued to hit And, you know, Carl Chester has been great for them at the top of the lineup. Zach Collins is, you know, batting over 400, slugging close to 700 this year. You know, a lot of power in that lineup. And, you know, when they get the pitching together, it's a scary team. It's a scary team. And they do have we've talked about this a little bit before, but they do have a favorable schedule for the most part. I mean, most of their tough ACC series are going to be coming at home. So, you know, watch out for Miami.
Yeah, Woodery going good meant that we didn't have walk-off Willie on Friday night for the third straight time. But, I mean, that was – I think Miami is probably happy that they didn't need walk-off Willie, that they got Woodery at something close to his best. I mean, he was very good. That probably wasn't his best. But he was very good on Friday night. Now, Carolina has now lost back-to-back series after not losing at all in the first month of the season. And they've only scored 21 runs in the last two weekends against Georgia Tech and Miami. Mike, you talked to Mike Fox last week now. Is this a more serious offensive concern? Is this just a matter of Georgia Tech and Miami pitching well? Like, where does Carolina's lineup go from here?
Yeah, you know, I think it's starting to get a little serious now that it's been back-to-back weekends. You know, when it was just Georgia Tech, you could say, okay, it was just a bad weekend. But, you know, we had concerns about this offense coming into the year, which is why they started off unranked in our top 25. It's really just a lot of changing pieces in that lineup, a lot of new players. And, you know, so far they had been up to the task. And really, you point to Brian Miller and Adam Pate at the top of the lineup as guys that have sort of driven that engine. But, you know, those guys have been struggling lately. They haven't been the same players, and, you know, they had a tough task. Brian Miller, a left-handed hitter, going against three lefties. I mean, that's a tough thing to do, and, you know, I'm looking at the box scores now, and, you know, really Mike Fox is talking about how important it was that those guys get going, and, you know, really other than a three-hit day for Miller on Sunday, those guys were fairly quiet this weekend. So, you know, I think they need to figure out things at the top of the lineup. You know, Tyler Ramirez is by far the best hitter and most polished hitter in that lineup, but they need the pieces around him to continue to produce. So I think offensive struggles, I think that their offense is going to be inconsistent throughout the year, just the nature of what they have, just a lot of youth. And, you know, I think they're starting three or four freshmen in the lineup. So their pitching, Gallen and Bukauskas, has been what's carried them, I feel like, throughout most of this year. And, you know, with Gallen and Bukauskas struggling this weekend, you know, you're not going to win a series. You're not going to outslug Miami, you know, in Coral Gables.
Yeah, I mean, that's back-to-back iffy starts for Zach Gallen. He had been so good out of the gate this year, and then he was not that great against Georgia Tech, and Miami gets to him a little bit, and Carolina really needs him going on Friday night, especially if this offense isn't going to be able to provide a ton of run support for them. You know, they need him and Bukauskas to really carry them. Jim, we've got Miami and Louisville and Florida State and then Carolina kind of separating from the rest of the pack. Carolina maybe falling back into the pack in the ACC a little bit here, but after those four, it's a little muddled. I mean, we got Clemson this week, and it comes back to the rankings. Georgia Tech comes out, Virginia comes out after losing to NC State. NC State themselves is kind of on the cusp of the rankings. What do you make of the middle of the ACC?
Oh, it's complicated. There's no easy answers there. Like you said, there's a little bit of a picture taking shape, like you say, with Louisville and Miami at the top, and kind of the clear top two. Well, I'll say clear, but you know, they're the top two, then FSU. And then maybe Carolina, although Carolina's kind of slipping back to the rest of that pack. I mean, then these other teams, you know, Clemson, NC State, Virginia now, Georgia Tech, those teams are all kind of fungible at this point. Maybe Notre Dame's kind of playing their way up into that group a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we'll see how those teams kind of, if one of those teams can emerge to be the fourth host out of the conference. I mean, North Carolina's kind of still got the inside track on that right now, just because of what they've done in the early portion. But certainly the way they're going, I mean, it could open up to one of these other teams. I mean, Georgia Tech had them as a host last week. Obviously, it won't be this week, and I can't lose the home series to Duke if you want to do that. But, I mean, all these teams kind of have things you can pick at. They've all done some good things. You know, we talked about Clemson beat South Carolina in a series, which is, that's still a pretty big deal, very big deal. although the rest of the resume is not doesn't really blow you away, but that's something they can peg to. NC State winning at Virginia is a, so that's a good series win. Georgia Tech won at North Carolina. So all these teams have shown they can beat good teams. And Virginia's kind of the one we've talked, a few times over the course of the season. We're kind of, there's some things to worry about with them and that pitching. Connor Jones even struggled this weekend, which he's been the constant. They did get a good outing from Adam Haseley on Saturday, which is good for them. They'll need that to keep up. But, the Cavs, we know that, last year they struggled and they figured it out. And we know that coaching staff is as good as there is. But it's a little worrisome. And we talked about last week how they're struggling to win on Sundays. And, Tommy Doyle was okay yesterday, but they still lost. And that's something they've got to figure out. You can tell, I listened to Brian O'Connor's post-game comments for a little bit yesterday, and there was no panic, but you could tell there was some frustration at their inability to win on Sundays.
Yeah, they're not going to panic there. I mean, that staff is way too experienced for panic, but it is getting to be time where you have to get going. We're about halfway through the season now, and they moved Haseley into the rotation with good results. And if Connor Jones had pitched the way he had been pitching, they probably win that series. But he didn't. And Connor Jones is going to have some tough starts. You're allowed to.
Everyone's going to at some point.
That happens, yeah. So they need to.
And they are the one team in this group that hasn't really had a high-quality series win,
right,
to be honest.
Which is why they fell out this week. They have had three losing weekends, but it's really, if they had had a big statement win, they might have been able to hang on. Or if they'd been Louisville last weekend, they would only have two series losses and they'd still be ranked. But they've got a their resume has a little bit of work to do if they want to host. And just in general, they're a team that needs to kick it into a little bit more a little higher gear. Clemson moves back in at number 21 this week. They dropped after getting swept at Miami. And they're interesting in that they've played really well at home this year and have not had to go on the road much. They got swept at Miami. They won a series at Wake Forest. And, that's pretty much the extent of their road resume on the weekends. They play South Carolina one game in Columbia and then one neutral and one at home, and they won the neutral and they won the home and they lost in Columbia. So it's going to be interesting to see how Clemson plays on the road, but they don't have to do it a ton. They go to Duke this weekend. That's a series you should be winning if you're Clemson, if you're trying to build momentum and build a case. And then they go to Louisville. But then they get Georgia Tech, they get Florida State, they get NC State, they get them all at home. And then they go to Notre Dame at the end of the year. I mean, it seems like Clemson is setting themselves up pretty nicely here, maybe, if Virginia can't figure it out. Maybe Clemson's the one that figures it out. I mean, who do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I still have some concerns over Clemson's starting rotation. They had been pitching well, but you look at this weekend and really all three guys struggled against Pittsburgh, which isn't the most potent offense in the country or in the ACC. So I don't know. I do like what I've seen out of the Clemson offense. Seth Beer has been, we've talked about him in the past, but he's been a revelation and, just a tremendous addition as a freshman this year. And, they do have Chase Pinder has been excellent for them and some veteran guys there, but it's really tough to, compare them with Virginia just because, I tend to lean toward Virginia because of Connor Jones on Fridays, because Adam Haseley is there. I think those two are going to win or at least put their team in a better position to win on Fridays and Saturdays than Clayt Schmidt and Alex Eubanks and Charlie Barnes, for Clemson. So that's kind of the separator for me. But, I don't know. We'll see going forward. The middle of this ACC is just very, very tough to predict.
Yeah, if you've been listening or reading all season, you know that I have long been a believer that Virginia would get things straightened out, that they have the talent and that the coaching staff would get those young guys playing well. And all along, a big part of that was Jones and Haseley on Friday and Saturday. And we didn't get Haseley on Saturday for the first half of the season because he was a little slow out of the gate in terms of being ready to pitch. As a two-way player, he was fine to hit, but pitching, he was a little slower, so they left him on midweeks for a while. And now that Jones and Hazley are together, I feel good, but we've also seen other struggles. I mean, I'm not throwing in the towel on Virginia by any means, but this middle of the ACC is tough to figure out. Not as tough as the Big 12. The Big 12, confusing again this weekend. We had Oklahoma State, the preseason favorites, going to West Virginia and losing a series. We had Texas, which beat TCU last weekend, going to Oklahoma and losing a series. TCU this weekend was out of league play, playing Wichita State, which they swept. And I think we still feel like that's the best team in the conference. But what is going on behind them, Jim?
That's another one of those no easy answers. I mean, kind of like I said, I still feel like at the top you got TCU and Oklahoma State. I think those are the two teams we've had up there since the beginning. I think those are the two best teams. Texas Tech is in first place right now. They're 8-1. Obviously, they played one more series than everyone else. But, I mean, and Texas Tech is good. I mean, they've still got some guys left over from that Omaha team. Ryan Mosley, Eric Gutierrez. So they've got some guys you can rely on. But, I mean, I think TCU and Oklahoma State are still the teams to beat. Obviously. But then you've got, that kind of leads you into West Virginia, who just took 2 out of 3 from the Cowboys, and that's, West Virginia, that's been a building program there under Randy Mazey. I obviously talked to him a few weeks ago. Did that building a case story on the Mountaineers, and I mean they're not a team that blows you away with talent. I mean their starters are all pretty interchangeable. They're all just kind of good college arms. They're no one that really wows you, but they've found a way to win. They've been good at home. I mean they've won. They went out and got swept by Fort Worth against TCU, but that's just going to happen to people. I think I remember when I talked to Randy Mazey about that, it was before that series, and he's like, you're just kind of, like, his attitude, but they're just kind of glad to get that series out of the way, whatever happened. But now they went and took care of Kansas, and now they come home and beat the Cowboys, and they've got their marquee series win now against Oklahoma State, and they had a good series win against Old Dominion, which is a good team. So, I mean, West Virginia, they're still a little, they're only 14-11 overall, so they need to, they don't have much room for error, but I think they're on a pretty good track to get to regionals, which has not been done in about 20 odd years there. But then after that, so you got those four, that's probably where it ends for the. I don't think the Big 12 is not getting more than 4, which actually would be an improvement from last year. But I think that's pretty much where that conference's at large hopes end. So we've given Oklahoma's struggles, although they did beat Texas this weekend.
Yeah, that was a nice win for Oklahoma, and it comes on the weekend. They drop Alec Hansen from the rotation, so he's gone from potential first overall pick to out of Oklahoma's rotation in the span of 2 months. And I thought Texas, coming off of that TCU win, was playing a little better, but then they lose on Sunday to TCU, and then they lose a midweek to Lamar, and then they go up to Norman, and they lose a series.
It's 12-16 overall.
Yeah, I mean there's.
I mean it's a super tough schedule they played, but still 12-16 is 12-16.
You've got to win some of these games at some point, and they haven't been doing that. And it felt like maybe beating TCU was going to be what turned it around, what got those guys going. But apparently there's still work to be done there. And Augie and his staff are good, and they've got good talent there, but something's missing right now, and I don't know what it is, but they're going to have to work to make up some of this ground. And I don't know if it's possible for them not to be in the same position they were in last year at this point, where
it's just heading that way.
That they went into the tournament last year having to win the Big 12 tournament to get in, and
that was the only way. And it's not like I said, the Big 12, you got those four teams, and then everyone else is just. You have to win the tournament.
The Pac-12 is another conference that
has no tournament.
Having some struggles. They do have no tournament. So, Utah right now tied for first with
Cal. Give them the auto bid in the next bracket I do.
Utah currently under 500 overall, 10-14, but they have won 3 straight Pac-12 series. which is an incredible accomplishment for them, considering that they've already matched their they have 7 wins in the Pac-12, and that is the most matches the most wins they've ever had since joining the conference.
And you did this sweeping Arizona's first time they've ever swept a Pac-12 series too. I mean,
and Arizona's not bad.
No, I mean, it was one. I think, I mean, so they beat Arizona State the week before, and Oregon struggled. You know, Arizona State has struggled, but sweeping Arizona is that's legit.
Yeah, I talked to Coach Johnson after Arizona beat UCLA last weekend, and he said, you know, he talked about how going up to Salt Lake City was not going to be easy. That Utah was playing pretty well, and you know, they were in it for a tough one, and they were. So the Pac-12 very topsy turvy right now, and I don't know how many bids they're looking at either. I mean, you got Oregon State and you got Cal, and after that, you got Washington maybe?
I mean, I think their RPI is too far gone. I think they're still in the hundreds, if I can get it up here on my screen fast enough. But, yeah, so you got those top two. And yeah, UW is, let's see where they did win yesterday, so I'll have to look up where they are now. But they were still in the hundreds. Who else? Arizona State's too far gone. UW's up to 90, but that's still a pretty long way to go. Stanford is a good. I mean, Stanford took 2 out of 3 from SC this weekend, so I had them in last week, so they'll still be in. That's a team that's probably on the right track. The LA schools not so much, which we'll probably talk a little more about here. But yeah, I mean, the Pac, you've got those top two. You know, Arizona's still probably, you know, they're, even though this weekend is obviously hurts them, you know, it's still like that team. Still, they've still got a pretty solid resume. They won that series at Rice, which is looking pretty good now. Stanford's going to be in the mix. I don't know, after that, unless I'm missing someone obvious, I think that's probably looking at maybe 5 or so bids, I guess. Probably, I think that's where I had them last week. And, yeah, so that's probably where they're... Unless, I mean, UCLA is obviously kind of the NSC. We'll see. Well, those are the two that are kind of, you know, could go either way, it looks like.
Yeah, Mike, both UCLA and USC lost series this weekend. Cal sweeps UCLA without Dalton Jeffries. Jeffries got scratched like 20 minutes before first pitch on Friday night with a minor injury, and they did not face the Golden Bears at all. And then Southern Cal beat Stanford on Friday night and then lost 2 games. Which one of those teams do you think is most likely to come out of this and fight their way back into contention in the Pac-12?
That's tough. It's tough just to predict this conference. You know, the teams that we thought that were going to be good. I mean, we had both USC and UCLA ranked fairly high in our top 25 in the preseason, and both teams have, you know, disappointed so far for the most part. You know, I look at those two rosters and, you know, even though UCLA lost a lot from last year, I do really like what they have on the pitching side of things. And, you know, just knowing what Savage has done the last few years and guiding this team, I feel like I would have to give the nod to UCLA. You know, USC has just really just struggled to get it going this year for whatever reason. I mean, they have a veteran team. I know they've dealt with some injury issues, on especially on the pitching side, but they just haven't really had that one series where they've been able to break out. You know, UCLA, you know, on the other hand, I mean, they do, I mean, they had that sweep of Washington State to start Pac-12 play, and we thought, okay, maybe they might be getting going. You know, they won 2 out of 3 against Texas, and obviously they had that great showing in the Dodger Stadium Classic where you saw them, so they've had flashes here and there where it's like, okay, you know, maybe, you know, here comes the Bruins, but I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, the only teams that haven't disappointed so far have been Cal and Oregon State. But, you know, even Oregon State now losing Drew Rasmussen, if I could say his name, you know, it's going to be curious to see going forward how they fill that void.
UCLA has played much better at home. I will say that these last 2 weekends have both been road series losses, and they get to go back home this weekend to play Stanford. But I think they really just need to get Griffin Cannon going. He was phenomenal when I saw him in L.A. Against Mississippi State. He went up against Dakota Hudson and beat Dakota Hudson. But his overall is 3-3, 428. And he's given up 54 hits in 48 innings. And they need him to lead the rotation, since Grant Dyer hasn't been that great either. He was hurt for a little bit, and he's back pitching now, but he hasn't been exceptional. I mean, UCLA, you never think about them as not having enough pitching, but this year they haven't been able to get the right guys going at the right time.
Look at what they've done in midweeks.
Yeah,
it's been ugly.
Yeah, it's been. I mean, that the part of the reason why they are under 500 is because they can't win in midweeks.
Have they won one yet?
I think they did finally win one, but
yeah,
it's been
they've given up just a. You know, avalanche of runs every time.
Yeah, I mean,
they
gave up 14 to Fullerton this week. They gave up 20 to Northridge 2 weeks ago. Now, I guess they still haven't won in a midweek, which is kind of astounding. You know, they'll have another chance this week against Northridge, which is coming off of a series loss to Fullerton. And while the Pac-12 has been weird and kind of disappointing, the Big West has been a lot more fun, I feel like. You know, we got Santa Barbara all the way up to 12 this week after they went to Long Beach and won a series against the Dirtbags. And Fullerton is playing a little bit better now, maybe. Mike, what did you think of what UCSB was able to pull off this weekend at Long Beach, winning the series on opening weekend of Big West play?
Yeah, well, I think it was a nice early statement for them. Obviously very early because it was the very first weekend of Big West play. But, you know, you look at both teams, it was an exciting series, a series that we were all highly anticipating just because both teams had been so hot. And, you know, we ranked them neck and neck right next to each other last week in our rankings, you know. And obviously that the Gauchos have showed that they're, you know, the hotter team right now and the better team right now going to Long Beach and taking that series. And I think you point to the pitching of UC Santa Barbara. I was curious to see how they would pitch this year after, you know, losing Dylan Tate, who was the anchor to their staff last year. But Shane Bieber, I've said it all year, I'm a believer in Shane Bieber. You know, he pitched really well on Friday night, and then, you know, Noah Davis behind him, you know, the next day throwing eight innings, one run. I mean, obviously the Big West, you're going to see more pitching and defense type teams, and. I think Santa Barbara has the pitching, and then, you know, enough athleticism in the lineup with guys like Calica and McAdoo and the like there to hit their way, you know, to the top there. So I think they're the team to beat. You know, they do have a very interesting series this weekend coming up at College of Charleston. It's kind of a strange cross-country trip to see for them. But I'm hoping to catch them there and get a close look at them. But, you know, a lot to like from their standpoint. And, you know, Long Beach, you know, hey, it's not like they were blown out. They were in every game. They pitched well in every game. Tanner Brown pitched really well in that Sunday game to salvage that series and avoid the sweep. So I'm not too down on Long Beach after that, you know, playing, you know, arguably the best team in the conference.
Yeah, that's Long Beach's first series loss. So that's, you know, they've been impressive all year long, and they've got Northridge this weekend and then Irvine. So those are two more good Big West teams that they've got coming here. But, you know, you have to feel pretty good about where the Dirtbags are, I think. You know, what they've done so far this season has been overall solid. And they aren't going to – I mean, it is a standard West Coast-style team where, you know, they're going to have to beat you with pitching and defense. So that means they're going to lose some close games. That's just going to be the way it is, because when you play close games – sometimes you lose them. And their losses were by a total of 3 runs this weekend. So that was a good win for UCSB, but, you know, I think Long Beach is still fine long term. Also starting conference play this weekend was the American. You guys were both at Houston, East Carolina, which was a rematch of last year's tournament championship game.
Yeah, that was a pretty testy little series there, especially on Friday. And they had a collision home plate where I think it was Luke Harmon from ECU, if I remember right, ran over Connor Wong.
I'm sure the fans of Greenville took
No, it was no reaction at all. but yeah, I mean, those are two teams that, kind of like you're saying, they're kind of, they've seen a lot of each other. If they meet again, if they do meet again down in the tournament, there'll probably be some long memories. But yeah, I mean, that's a good win for the Pirates. They've won some quality series. They've obviously won at Virginia, which we talked about. They win this one. I think they're only lost one series, if I remember right, which was the one at Rice, which formerly a conference rival, not anymore. But yeah, I mean the Pirates, yeah, that is their only series loss. I mean they're still what we thought they are. They don't wow you with talent, but they're hard nosed. Not just from running the guys over at home. They're hard nosed in general. Maybe that's a kind of a illustration of it. But yeah, I mean Harmon, they got, you know, good pitching efforts from Evan Krasinski and, you know, Joe Engel at the back, it's pretty solid rotation all around. So I mean they're gonna be in it all season.
Yeah, this is really my second close look at them this year, and you know, like Jim said, they aren't prospect heavy. They don't have the guys that really jump out tools wise. Although Bryce Harmon is a big boy, 6'6", 230 pounds, and you know, when he's barreling into you at home plate, you know, I'd probably run away if I was
if I was there.
Yeah.
Is there a Vine of that? Can I watch that?
I did not get a Vine of that, unfortunately. I got Vines of lots of other things that weekend, but not that. But yeah, you know, the thing about this ECU team is they do have a gritty approach. You know, I kind of liked just it seemed tension was high between the two teams this weekend. It was kind of nice to see, you know, that classic American rivalry, you know, between those two teams. But no, you know, I was impressed. I mean, Evan Krasinski, he's not going to blow it by you. He's going to top out around 88, 89. But he really has good feel for his off-speed stuff. You know, a very, very strong college left-hander, you know, that you'd like to throw for you on Friday nights. And I was really impressed by Jimmy Boyd on Saturday, you know, who nearly threw a complete game shutout against Houston, if not for an error with two outs that allowed a run to score. But, you know, he's a guy who's 86 to 88, but, you know, really good feel for his off-speed stuff and was locating the ball in the corners. You know, and I thought more than anything it was impressive that the ECU offense was able to actually beat both Andrew Lantrip and Seth Romero. You know, that's not something that a lot of teams have done this year. And it's not like Lantrip and Romero were bad. They weren't bad. It's just that ECU took advantage of some of the opportunities that they had. And on the other side, Houston was unable to do that. You know, I know Coach Todd Whitting was upset that his offense was unable to cash in on the opportunities that they had. But I still like this Houston team a lot just because they do have Lantrip and Romero, and I think they do have enough offensively to be in every game. And, you know, I think they're still the team to beat in the American.
Yeah, the American is an interesting conference. We've liked Tulane at various times this year. We like South Florida a little bit coming into the year. That's a very young team in South Florida, and you know, it showed at times. But you know, they've had a lot of success this year. And UConn with Anthony Kay is obviously tough to beat on Fridays. It's mm-hmm. Tulane found out up in Storrs this weekend. And then Cincinnati is playing very well of late. They started the year slowly, but they beat South Florida in a series this weekend, and they're 12-1 at home. Mm-hmm. And the competition has not been exceptional, but it's going to be tough, apparently, to go into Cincinnati and win this year. You know, that was an incredibly young team a year ago outside of Ian Happ. So those guys are a lot more experienced, and you know, they've showed well throughout the year. I mean, they started it off at LSU and almost beat LSU on Friday night, opening night in the box. And you know, they've continued it throughout the year, and it seems like, you know, they've got it rolling now a little bit, and I'm going to be very interested to see how that team carries on throughout the year.
Yeah, I had a chat actually with a player on Houston. We were talking a little bit about the conference, and he was saying, you know, some people tend to write off Cincinnati, but he's not taking them lightly. You know, he's certainly you know, not going to take them lightly when they head to Cincinnati and play them. But yeah, I mean the conference, it's a small conference, but there's a lot of competition, and it's a really strong group. Number 3 in RPI last year overall, so. A lot of fun baseball.
I especially like that they can play, you know, everyone can play each other. Mm-hmm. You know, I like the big conferences. That's fun. But, you know, in terms of just like the pure competition, everyone plays each other every year. So you can get some of these rivalries, even though it's a newer conference. A lot of these teams were in Conference USA together or the Big East or, you know, wherever they came from. You know, so they're used to playing each other and they play every year. So you can get some of this going in the American. I sound like Vince going on about how great the Americans.
Get him on Skype on this right now.
Yeah, so those were kind of the big storylines from the weekend. Do you guys have anything else that stood out from the weekend that was?
I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this Mississippi State Florida series goes. I mean, that's kind of one we're all gonna be looking forward to. That's two very good pitching staffs facing off. So that's that's a really big test for the Bulldogs. And we saw them win at Vanderbilt. So if they win that series, if they can somehow come out of there with a win, I think they'd definitely be definitely on track to secure a national seed. There'll be a third one out of the SEC.
Yeah, I really want to see how the soft underbelly of the ACC and the Pac-12 respond this week and the upcoming weeks, because it's still, as you could probably tell by our hesitance in answering some of these questions about these conferences. I mean, it's so hard to get a read of these teams because they're not the teams that we thought they would be, coming into the season. And I really don't know what to expect out of Clemson going forward and Virginia going forward and the Pac-12. I really don't know, what UCLA is going to be in the next few weeks or if USC is going to be able to get back into a groove. I mean, they're 12-14 right now. So that's kind of what I'm keeping an eye on going forward, is to see how these teams respond and to see if there's a clearer picture forming of these conferences going forward.
I'm a little intrigued by some mid-major action. We obviously spent most of this time talking about the power conferences, but you got St. Louis, four-time defending regular season champion in the A-10. They're off to a 6-0 start, which they had not done in any of the four previous years. So that's big after they opened the year 0-8. So they've really turned it around and are playing well, and you can read more about St. Louis over at baseballamerica.com and off the bat this week. And then this weekend, we got in the West Coast Conference, we got BYU and San Diego, and we had thought San Diego is the preseason favorite. They have not lived up to that. They're 16-14 overall. They're not quite hitting on all cylinders. They're 4-5 in the conference, and BYU has been the team that's really taken a hold there. They're 20-3-3 overall. They're 7-2 in the conference, and now San Diego has to go out to Provo to play the Cougars. And Provo has been an incredibly welcoming, a very good place for the Cougars this year. They're 10-2 at home, so San Diego really has to turn it on this weekend. That's a one bid league. Basically, right, Jim?
Most likely.
And, so San Diego is looking to get into the tournament for the first time in a few years, and it looked like this team maybe could do it. This weekend is huge for them. And BYU, meanwhile, it's a solid resume, but, we don't have them ranked quite yet. I don't know. People are probably going to ask in the chat this afternoon what BYU has to do to get ranked. I don't have a good answer for that.
Sweep San Diego, that might do it.
But yes, win this weekend, and that.
The thing with that conference is, unless they've changed it, only the top four even make the conference tournament.
Right.
San Diego is currently outside.
Yes.
So, like you're saying, they got to turn it on.
Yeah, and the Cougars are very intriguing, and so it'll. It'll be a big series for both of them, I think. Well, I believe that is it for this edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. We'll be back next week. We want to thank SeatGeek for sponsoring this podcast and all Baseball America podcasts. And I want to thank Jim and Mike for joining me here this week. And, like we mentioned, it's another exciting week of college baseball to look forward to. And we'll be back here next week to talk about it again. So thank you for listening.
This concludes our program. Visit baseballamerica.com for more podcasts. Today's Baseball America podcast was sponsored by SeatGeek. Baseball America podcast listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code BA20.